This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. It is day 99 of Donald Trump's time in office. The Trump team is touting the president's accomplishments, including job creation and national security measures. According to a White House press release, Donald Trump has signed 30 executive orders and worked with Congress to enact 28 laws. But he hasn't gotten the traction he wanted on big campaign promises like banning Muslims from entering the U.S. and building the Mexico border wall, as well as replacing Obamacare. Here to help us look back at nearly 100 days of the Trump presidency is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Frank, doesn't it feel like it's only 98 days?
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
But it is 99 as of airtime on Friday. And Donald Trump in Wisconsin said no administration has accomplished more in the first 90 days. He said that 9 days ago. What is he talking about?
Well, whenever you say, what is Donald Trump talking about, it always leads to a much longer conversation than I expected. But that is very fascinating. First of all, to compare any president's 100 days to what FDR accomplished in 1933 is just, you know, mind-boggling. But he's obsessed with this. I mean, you know, of course, the crowds are the greatest in history, and he had the greatest electoral margin since Reagan and all these things, always bigger and better. And to say that he has accomplished more than any president in history is just beyond, given the fact that so much, as you point out, so much of what he tried to do and what he said he would do has yet to be accomplished. I'm not saying it's a failure, because I think a 100-day marking period is really arbitrary and, as Trump says, probably ridiculous. But to say that he's accomplished more than anybody else is just beyond belief.
Well, let's take a look at the record over 100 days. It does pay us to pause every now and then and look back over the record of anybody in office. So we'll look at the president. What has he accomplished? If you were the president of the United States, what could you point to and say, look, this is what I have done in the past 100 days?
Well, a lot of the things he campaigned on, he has delivered on. Now, of course, a lot of them were executive actions. And, of course, remember when he was campaigning for president, he attacked Barack Obama for all the executive orders that Obama would do. Obama did 19 in the first 100 days, and as you point out, Trump has done 30. But I mean, this is regarding the Keystone Pipeline, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Act, the Obama regulations, the environment. Whether you agree with it or not, this is what Trump campaigned on, and he did accomplish that. He has also, I mean, not because of him, but he was fortunate enough for him to have a Supreme Court nomination and confirmation vote with Neil Gorsuch. And, you know, you think of legacies of presidents, there's probably nothing bigger than a Supreme Court appointment, and that was big. But the things he also said he would campaign on and promised, the wall, which he said was non-negotiable. Of course, once upon a time, Mexico was paying for it. But even his own fellow Republicans refused to put that in the spending bill that's going on before Congress right now. He has not gotten rid of the Affordable Care Act. It was a disastrous attempt last month, and now they're working on something right now. So, I mean, if I was giving out grades, I'd probably give him an incomplete, because it's early, but it's certainly not what he promised he would deliver on.
No, and let's stick with Obamacare and talk about the president's tax plan, which he unveiled earlier this week, because it does seem to indicate, again, this friction within the Republican Party over these initiatives. I mean, if you take Obamacare, for instance, it seems to be the sticking point is that what it points to is that Obamacare is working for a lot of people over the objections of Republicans. The thing works for millions of people, and to undo it now could come at their political peril, right?
Well, you know, I mean, it's absolutely true. But, you know, in a way, he shares a position with Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders, you know, Hillary Clinton would always attack Bernie Sanders by saying, if you want to tinker with it, you're going to destroy it. And Sanders said, no, but, you know, you need to make changes. And, of course, the Republicans agree that changes need to be made. But it was interesting. The reason it failed last month was because too many conservatives, the Freedom Caucus folks, felt it was Obamacare light and it was just, you know, not much of a change. So the changes they made for this go-around got the Freedom Caucus on board, but by doing so, you know, you may be alienating anywhere between 15 and 30 Republican moderates, whatever, how many Republican moderates remain anymore. First of all, you know, it raises premiums if you have pre-existing conditions. It cuts the waivers to make the premiums more affordable. So there are a lot of things the moderates are not happy with, let alone the nearly complete opposition of the Republicans. So right now you have maybe 17 to 20 Republicans who are definitely saying no. If they lose 22 Republicans, it won't pass. It won't pass the House. And the last thing Paul Ryan wants to do is to bring a second bill up and realize it wasn't going to pass in March, and to fail again now would be a disaster. So he says, look, we don't have the votes yet. We're still working on it, and we'll see what happens. But right now, even the Republican Party is not completely on board.
Let's take a look at this tax proposal. Again, late in the 100 days, so it really hasn't played out. Dramatic tax cuts, always popular, but could lead to deficits, not popular among Republicans. More about the tax?
Well, you know something, that's the dilemma in the Republican Party forever. Do you go with the tax cuts because that's so popular and it's been popular since Reagan, but do you increase the deficits? And ostensibly, Republicans say they are against that. But the thing is, when Trump announced his tax cut plan the other day, there were very few details. I mean, on paper, you know, you want to reduce business tax deals, the maximum from 35% to 15%. You reduce the individual tax payment to 35% from 39%. So, I mean, there's some bullet points there, but there are so many questions about loopholes that exist. And as you say, it's clearly going to raise, you know, raise the deficit. Plus the fact, and the Democrats point this out, and whether it's a stalling tactic or a gimmick or not, but the fact is, we don't know how this personally affects Donald Trump. And we've never said that about any president, because any president since the 1970s has released his tax returns. And we know what business interests he has. And by keeping them private for Donald Trump, we don't know if it's a Donald Trump tax cut. So the Republicans are not on board. The Democrats certainly aren't. And so both health care and tax cuts have a very iffy future.
Now, let's take a look at that, because you talked about Donald Trump's personal finances, which leads to the other aspect of his first 100 days, and that is the amount of scandal that surrounds this White House in just 100 days. I mean, take us through some of the stories that have really hurt this administration in terms of credibility.
Well, you know, nothing. I mean, I still think of Michael Kelly at the Republican convention last summer in Cleveland, where he's leading a chant of the delegates, "Lock her up," talking about Hillary Clinton. And what I've been reading about Michael Kelly, the former national security advisor who was forced out, about his details, about the money he got from Russian backed companies and other things that he didn't to tell the government in advance, or allegedly didn't tell the government in advance before he was hired as NSA. I mean, it's just remarkable. There are questions about Donald Trump's relationship with Russia and his aide's relationship with Russia. But when you look at what happened with Kelly, it's just absolutely remarkable, especially in the fact that the Trump administration seems to have a blind eye when it comes to people like that. So is it a scandal? I mean, there are certainly questions. Scandal is a tough word, but certainly there are questions, and there are tons of conflicts of interest everywhere between Trump's family and everyone else down that he just seems to poo-poo. And there, you know, everybody, every time I read an article, it says, well, it's possibly in violation of the law. It's possibly, well, when does it become possibly, when does it become an actual violation of the law? And Congress has got to do its job to make sure they get to the bottom of these things.
Talking to the political junkie Ken Rudin today on The State of Things. So we're talking about some legislation that is in the works, looking at the first 100 days. You know, Ken, a lot of fanfare in this first 100 days and kind of how it plays out. But you've been following, looking at the president, but also sort of on the Democratic side, following a story about Democratic National Committee Chair Thomas Perez, Senator Bernie Sanders sending mixed signals about the party's stance on abortion. And again, this really points to the party's future and where it lies over this issue and some others. But talk more about this one.
I think this is a great story, an important story, and it's really been unreported, along with the fact that we just saw today that Barack Obama just gave a speech for $400,000. I don't know why Democrats seem to not realize what the perception of all this is. But anyway, going back to the abortion issue, which is still splitting the Democratic Party, there's a race for mayor of Omaha, Nebraska on May 9th, and the Democratic candidate happens to be pro-life. He supports a bill that requires women to see ultrasounds before they go through an abortion. Because he's ostensibly progressive on economic issues, Bernie Sanders supports him. And for Bernie Sanders to support a pro-life candidate, he said, look, he's far better than the Republican candidate. He's also pro-life. And this is about, you know, progressive economics. And the NARALs of the world and the pro-choice folks of the world have ripped into Bernie Sanders saying, how dare you support a pro-life candidate? At the same time, Thomas Perez, the new chairman of the DNC, says the Democratic Party has no business supporting anybody who's pro-life. And when you think of Democrats like Bob Casey and Joe Manchin and Joe Donnelly, so many Democrats who are up in 2018 who are pro-life, if you write them out of the party, then Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer will never be the majority of their chamber, because you'll write them all off. You'll send them all into the Republican Party. So, we talk about all the splits in the GOP. The Democrats definitely have their fault lines as well.
Ken Rudin, always a pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Frank.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. You can check out a link to all of his stuff at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we preview a play that examines the relationship between memory, identity, and technology. That'll happen on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.